Chapter 5. Sir Harry Helps. As I drove, I thought about what I had found in Scudder's notebook. Now I understood that most of the story that Scudder had told me during his time in my flat was a lie. But somehow, I believed that the story in his notebook was absolutely true. A few things in his original story were factual. June the 15th was going to be a decisive point in history, but not because Carolides was going to be assassinated. Something much more important to the safety of Britain was going to happen as soon as Carolides was dead. Because of it, we would be at war in a few weeks. I had learned that there was no way to prevent the coming war. It had been planned for months. The assassination of Carolides on June the 15th was to be the excuse for a world war. Germany would find an excuse to attack Britain. The German attack would already be prepared because of what was to happen in London on June the 15th. On that day, a group of German spies called the Black Stone intended to steal the plans for Britain's naval defences when the French and British commanders met. Although few people knew about these meetings, the commanders of Britain and France met regularly to coordinate their defences in case of war. Scudder's notebook had no information about how the Black Stone intended to steal the plans, and I had no idea how it was to occur. Another mystery was a note about 39 steps that occurred repeatedly in Scudder's notebook. 39 steps. 39 steps. I counted them. High tide. 10:17 p.m. I could not understand why 39 steps and high tide would be important to the spies, but I knew that I needed to find out in order to prevent a disaster. My first thought was to write a letter to the Prime Minister, but I needed more proof before I would be able to convince anyone in the government that Britain was in danger. I continued to drive east and came to a small village. The village policeman was holding a telegram in his hand and seemed to recognize the car. He tried to stop me, but I hit him as he tried to grab me through the car window, and I escaped. It was stupid of me not to think that the police at the inn would send out a telegram with a description of me and the stolen car. I tried to take the most deserted country road and stay under the cover of trees as much as possible. From time to time I could hear the sound of a plane in the sky above me, and I then drove quickly to hide the car under the nearest trees until the sound of the plane's engine went away. In the late afternoon, I was driving down a small country road when, suddenly, a car came out of a private road right in front of me. There was no time to stop my car. I turned the steering wheel to avoid a collision and jumped out as the car crashed through bushes and trees and fell into a stream beside the road. Fortunately, my jacket caught on a bush and stopped my fall. I lay there, out of breath, until the other driver, a young man in goggles and a leather driving coat, helped me climb back up to the road.
"I'm so sorry. How careless of me," said the young man in a worried voice.
"It was my fault," I answered him, looking down at the car in the stream. "It's fortunate that I wasn't killed. That's the end of my Scottish motor tour. But it might have been the end of my life." In fact, I was pleased about the accident. Now, at least, I no longer had the stolen car.
"My house is nearby. I'll take you there and give you some clean clothes and something to eat," the young man continued. "Your clothes are all dirty and torn. Were the rest of your clothes in your car?"
"No, everything I've got is in my pockets. I'm from Australia, and I travel light. My name's Twisdon," I lied.
"An Australian? What luck," said the young man. "Do you know anything about commercial embargoes?"
"Of course I do," I lied again. "Australia is very much against commercial embargoes." We got into his car and drove to his house, where the young man gave me a cold beef sandwich and a glass of beer. He explained that he had to give a speech about commercial embargoes at a political meeting in the village, and that he hadn't prepared enough material to fill the time assigned for the speech. He asked me to help him by talking at the meeting about why Australians were against commercial embargoes. He was such a nice young man, and he had been so kind that I felt that I had to agree. At the meeting, the young man was introduced as Sir Harry. He spoke for 20 minutes. I could tell that he didn't know anything about commercial embargoes, but the people at the meeting didn't seem to notice that there was any problem with what the young man was saying. When he had finished speaking, I got up and talked about Australia. I didn't actually say much about commercial embargoes, but told them all I could remember reading about Australia. Everyone was very pleased, especially my young friend Sir Harry. And before we left, most of the people at the meeting came to shake my hand and thank me for my speech. We returned to Sir Harry's house, and I decided to tell him my story. I could see by his eyes that he was the kind of man I could trust. After a very good dinner, we went and sat in front of the fire in the library. As we smoked our after-dinner cigars, I told him my true story. I started with Scudder and the Portland Place murder in London. Then I told him about the plan that I had discovered in Scudder's notebook, and about the police and the dangerous spies who were following me.
"Your story is terrible, but I agree with you about the police," said Sir Harry. "You don't have enough proof yet to convince them that there is a group of German spies planning to murder Carolides, or to steal the plans for our naval defences. But I know someone who can help you get the proof that you need. My uncle, Sir Walter Bullivant, is the permanent secretary in the Foreign Office. He's the man you need to see. I'll write a letter to him about you."
The letter said that if a gentleman called Twisden came to see him before June the 15th, Bullivant should help him. He would know that I was the right man if I gave him the code word Black Stone and whistled the old Scottish song Annie Laurie. Sir Harry told me that his uncle would be at his country house in Berkshire, in the south of England. He then gave me a very old suit and a map of the area we were in. I was very tired and went to sleep. At 2 o'clock in the morning, Sir Harry woke me and gave me an old bicycle. I started south towards the moorland, where I planned to hide among the shepherds for a week.